We want to talk about your new book, Norm, Seasons of a Marriage, which I think is one of the better new books that's come out on the subject of marriage. And I think maybe the best place to start is with your title, Seasons of a Marriage. What do you mean by that?
Well, the idea of seasons seems to reflect the concept of the family life cycle. When we start out in marriage, we progress then to a new stage of becoming parents, and then we become the parents of older children, and then we come to that age that some people call insanity when our children become teenagers, and then we move eventually to the empty nest stage, and then to the time where we're alone again and we're thinking of retirement, and then also to the stage that is a bit uncomfortable to talk about for some people, but a time when very possibly we will be alone again because of the death of our spouse. Mm-hmm. And so as I thought of the area of seasons, I began considering what is it like in each season of marriage? What do we need to think about in advance? In other words, what do we need to try to anticipate so that we can prepare for the approach of a new season so that it doesn't throw us and we can make the best of that time of life so that it's both fulfilling to us as individuals and as a couple, but also it's a time when we can really glorify the Lord.
All right, let's take that analogy to seasons as our place to begin and talk about the springtime of the relationship. The couple is just getting married. Now, you deal in the early part of your book with the fact that statistics now show that the probabilities of having a highly successful marriage are really not too good, that the chances are greater that you're going to have quite a bit of struggle in marriage with the kind of culture we live in and the financial struggles and other things that young people go through. In fact, you listed three reasons why many marriages dissolve. Tell us what those are.
One of the main reasons that marriages dissolve, I believe, is for the lack of preparation. So many couples go into marriage with a high level of idealism, and they have not taken the time to take out of the upcoming marriage relationship a number of the surprises that are going to hit them. Hmm. And so that's one of the big factors. I think there's another factor that that throws us sometimes, and it's that of change. We like to be in control of the changes that occur in our life. Hmm. And if we're not, then we feel somewhat impotent and powerless. And when something unexpected comes in,
it blows us over.
Oh, it blows us over. And secondly, we might want to project the blame for this change. If it's a very hurtful type of a change, we might want to blame others. And the one that we blame the most might be our spouse, even though they're the one that we're closest to.
Yeah.
And I think this is a way of alleviating some of the guilt that might creep into our life at that point.
Joyce, how old were you and Norm when you got married?
We were both 22.
Were you ready for all the changes, for all the stresses, for the seasons in your marriage?
No, at that time I don't believe we were.
What kind of struggles did you go through in the early days, in the springtime?
Well, going back a little, we were so much in love, I don't really think that we looked at our marriage realistically. And we were thrown right into seminary and all the stresses. I was to be working and putting him through school, and I became ill. There were many disappointments that first year.
So, Norm, when you write about the need for a proper perspective on marriage and getting your assumptions straightened out and that kind of thing, that's partly autobiographical. You've seen the consequences of not doing that.
Yes, I have. And one of the things I would like to see happen for couples who are marrying today is that they marry with a greater degree of realism, and they learn how to anticipate some of those unexpected events that are going to come into their lives.
All right, let's talk about the big unexpected event that occurred in your life. Joyce, you gave birth to a little boy named Matthew. Tell us about that.
Well, when Matthew was about 4 months old, 4 or 5 months old, I began to realize that he wasn't looking responsive and wasn't responding to us, and I realized there was something wrong in his little life. The Lord showed me in a very plain way. I had this feeling, but I had nothing to back it up. The Lord showed me that there was something wrong with our child and that he was retarded.
Hmm. What kind of emotional impact did that have on you, and especially on your relationship?
Well, at that time, I really went to my knees, and I had trusted the Lord and committed my life in college, and then it was a very large commitment for us when we married, a commitment to Christ and to each other. But I really committed my life at that time because I knew the Lord was only the one that could take care of this problem.
Now, Norm, you listed a few minutes ago change as one of the things that actually destroys a marriage. Did it weaken your relationship or did it bring you together?
I think what happened initially was we were stunned when we got the official diagnosis from the UCLA Medical Clinic of the fact that our child was a very severely retarded child. And I think you feel very helpless and frustrated, and you go through the whole gamut of emotions of anger and depression. We've discovered over the past few years that about 80% of couples who have a handicapped child divorce because of the stress upon their marriage and the tendency to blame.
Yeah.
I think, though, that Matthew was really the refining process that God chose to use in our life to have us develop into what he wants us to be as individuals and also in our marriage relationship.
But you're not saying it didn't put a strain on the relationship.
I think it put a strain, and yet, as I remember back at least, because of the strain or tension, it allowed us the capability of growing.
Mm-hmm.
I think what we had to come to in our own mind was an attitude change that we could fight this thing for the rest of our life, or we could learn to accept Matthew in our life, learn to make the adjustments, and then see how we could grow with him in our life and how we could continue to grow as people.
And you did just that.
Yes.
You talk in your book about expectations that people carry into marriage. What do you mean by that?
Oh, all people, when they enter marriage, have certain expectations in terms of what their marriage is going to be like, how the other person is going to respond, what it's going to be like 5 years from now, 10 years from now, 15 years from now. Every couple I work with in premarital, I ask them to give me a list of 25 expectations they have for the other person. And as I go through and help them evaluate them, they realize that if we had not become aware of these expectations and had this list for the other person without this evaluation, it would have been a disaster.
It's a little like the newlywed game on television or that sort of thing, where you don't you recommend that they each fill out that list and then exchange them or read them to each other? And I can imagine that you have seen countless situations where there's a great look of shock come over somebody's face.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. In fact, in the first session with a couple, when I ask them for their expectations, often I'll have a young man say, well, what do you mean by an expectation? And I'll say, well, who's going to get up first thing in the morning and put the coffee on? And he'll say, well, she is. And my response is, that's an expectation. And she's a bit surprised at that point.
Someone wrote that all conflict and all human hurt grows out of differing assumptions. And if before people got married, they could check those assumptions as to whether the wife is going to work or not after the marriage or after the first child comes, or is there going to be a child, or are there going to be five of them, and how quickly, and what are they going to do with their money, and all of these are assumptions or expectations, as you're saying, but most people do not check them, do they?
No, they don't, and even if we have expectations clarified, now what happens when we have a change that occurs, such as in our case with Matthew becoming a part of our life?
Hmm. All right, now, Joyce, relating what Norm is talking about to your own early marriage, the expectations. Here you are, a new bride. You're coming into marriage. You're looking forward to being a wife and a mother. What kind of expectations did you have about children and about how that would change you and about the role of motherhood?
I don't believe I had any expectations for motherhood. I really hadn't given it any thought.
And that's just the point that Norm is making. Many people come into marriage without even thinking through the major life-changing responsibility that's about to occur to them in parenthood. Now, your first child occurred how quickly after that?
2 years.
And a little girl came into your family?
Yes.
How did you adjust to that?
Well, I was really quite amazed how much energy it took to care for her, and she was a bubbly, bright, effervescent little girl, and I was usually running to catch up with her.
Mm. But then 6 years later, Matthew was born.
Yes.
All right, that was 8 years into your marriage. How had your expectations changed with regard to this second child?
Yes, I was really looking forward to this child and felt I was really ready for a healthy, bouncy, and hopefully a boy.
Mm-hmm. And the Lord did not give you what you expected.
I was delighted with my little boy, but I was very surprised when I discovered that he was handicapped. It's like the Lord entrusted a special responsibility to me.
Now, Norm, is it your experience that most families have some surprise like this? In your case, it happened to have been a handicapped child. But what you're saying, I think, in your book is that expectations are often not realized for many different reasons, but nearly everybody goes through this shock of having things different than they thought they were going to be.
That's right. It could be with a family member. It could be with a job, change of location, a house that is taken out from underneath us. It's just any of those small but even large unexpected events where we tend to feel that we're not in control, and I think we are a people who likes to feel like they're in control.
Let me play devil's advocate for just a second, Norm. What difference does it really make to move the discussions and the adjustments to the unexpected from the period of 1 to 5 years after marriage to the period of premarital counseling? Haven't couples for generations just dealt with things as they come along? And it sounds good on paper to say, let's talk over how we would deal with that when and if it came up. But do you see in your counseling that it really makes an impact on the quality of the relationship to deal with that ahead of time?
Very definitely, because one of our specific goals is to help a couple take out of their upcoming marriage as many surprises as possible. And the feedback that we do receive from couples is that it has been very thorough and very eye-opening. And when I'm working with a couple in premarital, I want them to go out of the session feeling quite uncomfortable. I don't want them to have a feeling of closure. I want them to think about what we've talked about and even agonize over it to bring in a high level of realism into the upcoming marriage relationship. And we've also discovered that as high as 40% of the couples that we see make a decision not to get married because they've now come to grips with some of the issues that they have not focused on before.
Dr. Tony Campolo says romantic love is probably the poorest basis for a marital relationship. I assume you'd agree with that.
I'd agree. I think there is a place for romantic love all the way through the various stages of marriage. And unfortunately, we nurture romantic love prior to marriage. And then once we get there and the conquest is over, then we let it die. And yet it's actually increasing and enhancing that type of love along with deepening the agape love and the friendship love that can really add a sense of delight to the marriage all through the various years.
So the primary recommendation that you'd make to get people through the first season of the marriage, I suppose we'd call it the springtime when things are new, is to get ready for it, the proper orientation, premarital counseling. Is that right?
Premarital counseling and begin to anticipate change. And then also another aspect, which is one of the reasons why I wrote the book, was to help couples become aware of what happens to them as individuals as they go through the various stages of their life. For example, when we move into the age of the 30s.
Let's do it. Let's move on into that second season now.
When a woman is approaching the 30s or right around that time, she's at a point where she's going through what we call an identity crisis. Who am I? Maybe I'm a mother. I have two children, but is there more than this? For the man, it's a time of evaluation as to whether or not he wants to intensify his involvement with his work or whether this is the time to make a switch. And so many men, unfortunately, in our society are building their sense of identity and their self-worth through their occupation that their job becomes paramount in their life. And if they have been placing that as number one and not giving time and attention to the marriage relationship, then the wife is probably quite frustrated because her intimacy needs are not being met. And I believe I was not a whole lot different than most men during the early years of our marriage. I was, in a sense, building my identity and self-esteem through my ministry at the church. I had strong tendencies of being a workaholic, where I'd work 60 hours a week, take 8 units of graduate work at the same time. And I was at a point in my life where if I had 5 or 10 minutes to sit down with nothing to do, I felt guilty.
And there's you didn't write 35 books playing golf, that's for sure.
No, but things have changed over the past 10 years in our relationship and also in the amount of time that we have together.
Joyce, if there's any one subject that we're going to talk about today that probably more women will identify with than any other, it is being the stay-at-home wife who has a workaholic husband. That's an extremely common phenomenon. What did you feel when Norm was working 60 hours a week and when he felt guilty for sitting down for 10 minutes? When you had a very inquisitive, little, normal, healthy child who was probably into everything, and another youngster that was handicapped and retarded and took a great deal of your time. So you were burdened, even if you wanted the responsibility and loved it, and I'm sure you did. You were carrying this load of two children, one handicapped at home with a husband who was gone all the time. How'd you feel about that? How depressed did you get over it? What kind of pressure did you put on Norm to change? And how did you accept that at that second season of your marriage?
Well, basically, I really felt that my role was to be supportive, in that the Lord wanted me to be supportive to my husband. But really, in dealing with reality, I was concerned about him. Hmm. I saw changes in him. I saw him frustrated. And I really felt like I needed to confront him.
For health reasons.
For health reasons and just concern about him in general.
Hmm. How did you confront him? Did you nag him?
No, I don't believe I'm a nag. I've certainly tried not to be. But I would finally just confront him and tell him that I was concerned about him.
Hmm. Did you hear those messages, Norm?
Oh, I heard them loud and clear. In fact, there have been three occasions when Joyce did this very thing, where she confronted me, and her statement was, "I feel that you're doing entirely too much." And on one of those occasions, she added to that, "Why are you doing all that you are doing?" which really registered with me and forced me to take a look at the motivation. And then another time, or the most recent time when this was stated, was that she made the statement, "I feel you're doing too much, and I don't want you to stop because of having had a heart attack or dropping dead." And my ears really perked up at that. But I had to agree with her that I was doing too much. And it was like I was moving that direction, but when Joyce would voice her concern over this, then that gave me the opportunity to talk more with her about it and to share our feelings and then to make some plans. What are we going to do about it at this particular time? Mm.
You know, I could easily have been a workaholic also, because I get great satisfaction out of what I do, and I just love it and feel a sense of ministry in it and so on. But my wife was not as accepting and as tolerant as you were, Joyce, in it. She didn't just think of me. She also thought of our marriage and our relationship, and absolutely insisted that it be different than that. And I think that was the healthiest thing Shirley ever did for me, because she was not going to allow us to have a kind of relationship that drifted in opposite directions. And while that produced some conflict until we got it resolved, it helped me refocus my priorities. And a lot of what I speak about and write about now is the product of what Shirley saw before I did and then taught it to me. And like you, Norm, I was listening.
Jim, I think you and I are quite a bit alike in that we both really enjoy our work, and I think we both responded to the messages of our wives. But there are a lot of women probably listening to your radio program where they have some concerns for their husband's involvement in work, and they're not getting the kind of response. And I think it's important that when they share their concern, they do it so that a husband hears it as a concern for them and for the marriage relationship. And I really don't believe that a woman should just back off and never say anything. I think she also has to realize that since so many men have their identity tied into their work, that they are taking this, or they might take it, as a personal affront. And maybe if she can learn how to express herself consistently, but in a gentle way of saying that, "I understand that your work is important and I value your work too, I really would like to have more time for us, and I'm wondering in what way I could meet some of your needs that you would like me to meet for you.
Well, your point is certainly well taken that this is one of the more stormy seasons of a marriage and one of the rather common conflicts that occur between a husband and wife. In the interest of time, let's rush on to the midlife years and the empty nest syndrome, because that's where you all are right now, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, we actually entered our empty nest stage of marriage about 6 years ahead of schedule.
And by that you mean you placed Matthew in a home for retarded children at 10 years of age, is that correct?
That's right.
Having given just about every day of his life to his care and maintenance and so on, what was it suddenly like to have him gone and to have him taken care of by others?
I feel like the Lord really had prepared us ahead of time. And so it was really quite amazing how the Lord lifted the load off of our shoulders. It was like we were light.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a very special time for me.
Did you struggle with guilt for having placed him in a home and letting other people take care of him?
No, I did not. I really felt that I had given it all that I could and that now it was a time for someone else to try.
Yeah. How often do you see him now, Joyce?
Once a month.
And he comes home or you go there?
He comes home for the weekend.
Huh. Norm, did you struggle with guilt over that placement?
No, neither of us really did, because it was such a gradual time of releasing Matthew. I think we both began thinking about it at the same time. And maybe we were a little tentative in approaching the other person about the idea. Had you ever thought of Matthew living elsewhere? Maybe we were a little concerned about how the other person would respond. And then we prayed about it, and Joyce did a tremendous amount of research and work looking into various homes that would handle our son.
Now, you refer to that as your empty nest syndrome, and you're saying that it wasn't terribly difficult, and yet you write in your book that the empty nest can be a time of real struggle, especially for the woman involved.
Well, our emptiness started then, and then when our daughter left to live on her own, instead of having a 15-year-old son at home, it was just really the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And again, most couples struggle with this because they do not prepare themselves in advance. And secondly, if the woman's identity is tied up in caring for the child, then when the child goes, she's really depressed and despondent. And even though many men are, they still have their work to pour themselves back into. And by doing that, they further isolate themselves from their spouse, and the wife feels terribly alone.
How do you recommend people cope with it?
Well, planning for it in advance, talking over how will this affect us? What do we need to do at this particular time in our marriage to make sure our marriage is strong and it's developing and it's growing? And what are we going to use to fill in some of the gaps there? And even asking the question, what is our identity built upon? Those are some of the key issues that we talk about.
Our time is virtually gone, Norm and Joyce. We're talking about your book, Seasons of a Marriage, and we've talked about that early stage of marriage and then the 20 to 30 period where the wife is establishing her identity as a mother, perhaps, and the husband as a worker, his job becomes extremely important. Then we've gone on to the empty nest and the midlife years. There's so much more we could say about that. In fact, entire volumes have been written about that subject. Bring us into a landing, Norm. What are the final seasons of a marriage, and what can we anticipate?
Well, there are two final seasons that I talk about in the book. One is the role reversal that occurs between ourselves and our older parents. And one of the greatest adjustments and frustrations is discovering that often we have to become a parent to our own parents as they move along in years. And then there comes that time in which we really don't want to think about or talk about when we're going to be single again because of the death of our spouse. But by thinking about these issues, planning for them, talking them over, committing them into the care of the Lord, it will make that adjustment far easier. There will always be pain. There will always be a certain sense of upset, and that is normal. But this will help us go through that time of adjustment so that the pain doesn't linger and cripple us for the rest of our life.